Speech work document 9. Lincoln's attitude toward evildoers. From an address delivered July 4, 1906, at Oyster Bay, New York. If Lincoln and the men of his generation, the men who followed Grant in the field, who upheld the statesmanship of Lincoln himself in the council chamber, if those men had not done their full duty, not a man here would carry his head high as an American citizen. Any work done by any man must largely have its influence, not upon the life of that man, but upon the lives of those coming after him. And just as this was true of the men of Lincoln's generation, so it will be true of those that follow us. We who did not fight in the Civil War have reaped the immeasurable benefit from the courage and self-devotion of those who did fight. Had the grapes they pressed to their lips been sour, our teeth would have been set on edge. Had they shown themselves cowards, our heads would have been bowed in shame. So, if we of this generation do our duty when face to face with our special industrial, social, and political problems, our children and children's children shall be the better for it. If we fail in our duty, if you men here of middle life, you men with children, if you fail in your duty, by just so much do you add to the weight of the burdens that your children shall bear. Our duty calls for the exercise of more than one quality in our part. First of all, it calls of course for the qualities of honesty and courage. I use honesty in the broadest sense, honesty in the sense of disinterested devotion to what is right, disinterested devotion to the ideals of our national life. If we have not those qualities first, then all else shall avail us little. In 1861 the first qualities necessary were those qualities of the heart which made the average loyal citizen resolute that even at the cost of his own life the Union should be preserved, which gave him the power to appreciate what was meant by lofty devotion to an ideal, and the power to put into actual fact that devotion. The man needed to feel the lift of patriotism first, and then he needed the courage to make his patriotism of avail. There are old soldiers in this, as in every other audience that I address, and these men know that first and foremost it was necessary to have the power of love for the Union, of love for the nation, and that next it was necessary to have the courage to make that love good. I do not care how devoted the old soldier was to the Union, if, when the crisis came he ran away, his devotion did not count, and in the other hand no quality of courage availed the man. If he had not in him the spur that drove that courage into action, that made that courage of avail to his neighbors. In the same fashion we citizens of these peaceful days need first and foremost the moral quality, and next, back of that moral quality, the courage, moral and physical as well, that makes the moral quality count. Yet these qualities by themselves are not enough. The greatest patriotism and the greatest courage can be hopelessly marred by folly. None of you are worth anything as citizens, none of you can be worth anything as citizens, if you have not the fund of moral qualities which find expression in love of country, love of neighbors, love of home, which make you honest, decent, clean living, right thinking. None of you will be worth anything, if in addition to those qualities you haven't the courage, physical and moral, without which no American citizen can do his full duty as a citizen. And yet, back of them and in addition to them we must have the sanity, the common sense, the just judgment, which neither hysterically overemphasizes nor blindly refuses to acknowledge the wrongs that exist and the ways in which those wrongs must be cured. We have heard a great deal during the past year or two of the frightful iniquities in our political and our business life, the frightful wrongdoing in our social life. Now there is plenty of iniquity in business, in politics, in our social life. There is every warrant for our acknowledging these great evils. But there is no warrant for growing hysterical about them. It is a poor trick to spend 9/10 of the time in saying that there never was such iniquity, as is shown in this nation, and the remaining 10th in saying that we are the most remarkable nation that ever existed. We want to be more careful in blaming ourselves and more careful in praising ourselves. Overemphasis in praise, as well as overemphasis in blame, is apt to overreach itself, just as the man who promises too much, especially in the stump, is apt to strike the balance by performing too little. It is true that there is much evil, but in speaking about it, do not let us lose our heads, and above all let us avoid the wild vindictiveness preached by certain demagogues, a vindictiveness as far as the poles asunder from the wise charity of Abraham Lincoln. Let us remember that many of the men who do the things of which we complain, even among those who do the worst, are American citizens with much the same tastes, tempers, and characters as we have, but who have been exposed to special temptations. Of course there are some men who are inherently wicked, and for these only drastic punishment will avail. But very many wrongdoers, especially when the wrongdoing is committed by a whole class, are wrongdoers only through force of circumstances. Try to remove the cause of their wrongdoing, remove as far as may be both the power and the temptation to do wrong, but do not cultivate toward them a spirit of rancorous hatred which in the end will react most surely upon ourselves. Or with the evil, but show no spirit of malignity toward the man who may be responsible for the evil. Put it out of his power to do wrong, if necessary punish him, where he has done wrong, but do not let this nation ever get into the frame of mind which, under infinitely greater provocation, Abraham Lincoln strove to prevent its falling into at the time of the Civil War. The poorest of all emotions for any American citizen to feel is the emotion of hatred toward his fellows. Let him feel a just and righteous indignation where that just and righteous indignation is called for. Let him not hesitate to inflict punishment where the punishment is needed in the interest of the public, but let him beware of demanding mere vengeance, and above all of inciting the masses of the people to such demand. Such a demand is alike un-Christian and un-American, and the man who makes it is false to the highest duties, principles, and privileges of American citizenship. There is wrong enough to fight. Fight it, cut it out, and having cut it out, go your ways without either hatred or exultation over those at whose expense it has been necessary that it should be cut out. There are plenty of wrongs done by men of great means, and there are plenty of wrongs done by men of small means. Another sentence of Abraham Lincoln's which it is well to remember is that there is a deal of human nature in mankind. If a man possesses a twisted morality, he will show that twisted morality, wherever he may happen to be. If he is not a man of really twisted morals, but an ordinary happy-go-lucky individual who does not think very deeply, he will often do what ought not to be done, if nobody brings home his duty to him, and if the chances are such as to render wrongdoing easy. Show scant mercy to the man of twisted morality, but remember that the second type of wrongdoer stands more in need of the reformatory than the penitentiary. This year in Congress our chief task has been to carry the government forward along the course which I think it must follow consistently for a number of years to come, that is, in the direction of seeking, in behalf of the people as a whole through the national government, which represents the people as a whole, to exercise a measure of supervision, control, and restraint over the individuals and especially over the corporations of great wealth in so far as the business use of that wealth brings it within the reach of the federal government. We have accomplished a fair amount, and the reason that we have done so has been in the first place, because we have not tried to do too much, and in the next place, because we have approached the task absolutely free from any spirit of rancor or hatred. In any such movement a man will find that he has allies whom he does not like. You cannot protect property without finding that you are protecting the property of some people who are not very straight. You cannot war against the abuses of property without finding that there are some people warring beside you whose motives you would frankly repudiate. But in each case be sure that you keep your own motives and your own conduct straight. When it becomes necessary to curb a great corporation, curb it. I will do my best to help you do it. But I will do it in no spirit of anger or hatred to the men who own or control that corporation, and if any seek in their turn to do wrong to the men of means, to do wrong to the men who own those corporations, I will turn around and fight for them in defense of their rights, just as hard as I fight against them, when I think that they are doing wrong. Distrust, as a demagogue, the man who talks only of the wrong done by the men of wealth. Distrust, as a demagogue, the man who measures iniquity by the purse. Measure iniquity by the heart, whether a man's purse be full or empty, partly full or partly empty. If the man is a decent man, whether well off or not well off, stand by him. If he is not a decent man, stand against him, whether he be rich or poor. Stand against him in no spirit of vengeance, but only with the resolute purpose to make him act, as decent citizens must act, if this republic is to be, and to be kept, what it shall become.